Good morning. Let me hook things up here, see if this all works. Have new batteries and everything, so I've got great hopes for things. I might look a little bit of a mess, but I apologize, okay? God bless all of you who are here early this morning. Always like it when I'm one of them, and I almost made it this morning. I'm sorry, but things are a little hectic around my house, as you might know. Special thanks for the last couple of classes, Dave a week ago, and Dan last Wednesday for filling in. Thank you so much for doing that. I listened to the class on the website, and Russ isn't here, but how many of you knew that all of our Bible classes are on the website now? So if you want to listen to Bible classes and sermons, they're on the website. That is, if they don't erase it again, because I guess we got a note we're over the limit again last night. So we'll find out what happens there, but all of the recent stuff is on there. So if you miss one, you can always go back and pick it up. So if you need help to learn how to do it, Russ can help you. Actually, I think I even figured out how to do it right. I've been doing it successfully. Thanks so much. Sharon is at home recovering. She did have rotator cuff surgery, and for those of you that don't know the rotator cuff, there are four muscles and a set of tendons that hold your shoulder, your arm into your shoulder, and all of those have to work right, and they make your arm do all of these things and lift your arm and whatever you're doing that with those four muscles. And she tore one of them a little bit and one of them really badly, and Dr. Johnston put her back together, and took 2 hours for him to do it, so it was kind of an involved thing, but it was a lot less damage than he was expecting to find, because he looked at the MRI and it said it was going to be 3 hours worth of fixing things. She's recovering at home, and yesterday we took the morphine pump out, so she's feeling it. So she cries a lot when she's taking morphine, but she hurts a lot when she's not. So she's adjusting to all of that at home. The prayers of Christians do make a difference. When we ask God to help us, He does. And I appreciate all of your prayers, and Sharon appreciates all of your prayers. So don't stop praying for her and for others who are suffering. This morning we're going to talk about fruit of the Holy Spirit. But I want to back us up a little bit before we do that. You talked on Wednesday about Galatians 5. Let me skip across to this. We spent a lot of time talking about the Holy Spirit and the nature of the Spirit this quarter. There are three questions, at least, that I think most Christians ask themselves about the Holy Spirit. First is, they ask the question, is the Holy Spirit actually present in my life? Anybody identify with that? Have you ever wondered about it? Somebody ask you about it, how do you know? How do I know that the Spirit is actually in me? And what is the result of the Spirit being in me? Back at the very beginning, I asked you to tell me about your fathers. Remember? And this was all a setup to try to talk about, well, what is it like to be like a father? How does a father behave toward his children? And this was to try to get us thinking about God's motivation for helping us. Because fathers, by their nature, help their children. There's this, and by help I mean that they don't just go and do it for them, is that there's this intention of a father to get the child to the point that they can do things for themselves, because guess what dad knows? He's not always going to be there for them. So he can't just keep doing it for them. They have to learn to do it. So there is this intention to help. And God is like a father to us, and He has sent the Spirit to help us. Today, I would like to ask you about your mothers. You know, my mom liked to cook. I mean, she used to follow me and my brother and sister around and say things like, if you love me, you'll eat this. Okay? Dan preached a sermon a few weeks ago, and he started talking about cake pans, and it was right about Easter, and I'm sorry, brother, I've forgotten what the point of your sermon was, but I remember the cake pan part, because because he was talking about, let's see, if you take a rectangular pan to bake your cake, and what are you going to expect to see when you get something out of that? And I thought rectangular, and he said rectangular, and we were doing great. Okay. And then he said, if it's a square cake pan, what shape are you going to get out? And I thought, square. And he said, square. And it was great. And then he said, okay, what if your mom used a round cake pan? And I thought, rabbit. And I don't know. He said, round, which I can't understand. You see, my mom, when she would bake a cake, she baked a round cake every year at Easter time. Any of your mothers bake a special round cake at Easter time? It was always a chocolate cake, and she'd whip up some white icing. Anybody know where? And she'd get some jelly beans and some toothpicks. Anybody done this? What did she do with that round cake when it came out of the oven?
She cuts the ears off.
She cuts it in half, right, first. Folds it up, cuts the ears off. Okay, and then what'd she do with it? What'd she cut off? Moves them around and gives the bunny rabbit a tail, okay? And then she covers it with white icing, and she puts the black jelly bean on the nose, and she puts two pink jelly beans for the eyes and gives the rabbit some whiskers. And so if you see a round cake pan, what shape do you expect to see?
Round.
A rabbit. Every year, a rabbit, okay? And the strangest thing about this rabbit is that even when we got to be pretty good size, you know, my mom was about this high, my mom, and of course we got to be a little higher than she was, we were all kind of grown up, and what did we want at Easter time? Mom, would you make us a rabbit cake, okay? Did your mom ever do something like that? Did you ever ask your mom, would you make something special? What did you ask your mom to make that was special? I'll tell you another one. I asked her to make me when I got to be 13, I said, would you make me a cake that looks like the original American flag with the 13 stars on it, or the candles, right? She made that. What did you ever ask your mom to make that was special?
Scalloped potatoes and ham.
I got the makings for that at home. Chicken and noodles. Ooh.
Homemade noodles
like dumplings, like the firm ones, right?
Yeah, wow.
Ooh, I love those. We call those chicken and dumplings. They're good, aren't they? Yeah.
Homemade biscuits.
What?
Homemade biscuits.
Homemade biscuits? Are you talking about like the buttermilk scratch biscuits for breakfast, or are you talking about the
but I'm talking about the dough.
The big yeast rolls. Ooh, yeah. My mom made both of those. Those are great. Mom, would you make us some yeast biscuits, sir? And my grandma, you know, she'd work in the garden, she'd look at her fingers and say, ooh, boy, look at my fingernails. I think I need to make some biscuits. So, then my uncles ate them up, every one. What else did you ask your mom to make?
My grandmother used to make wonderful crepes. A sweet dough that she twisted and then fried it, and then you dipped it in sugar.
Ooh, that sounds pretty good. So, any of you who ate desserts in Germany, do you tell us about desserts in Germany? Not as sweet, but very tasty, like lots of fruit. Okay, really good stuff. What else did you ask your mom? Any special requests?
Pigeon pie.
What?
Pigeon pie.
Pigeon pie. Well, you're going to have to elaborate on that one. I don't know about that one.
Take these young pigeons and mom fix them. It was just like the best you could have. The, you know, the
squab.
Some meat pie. Hot pie.
Pigeon pie.
Yeah. They called it. Mom called pigeon pie, and it was like a pie. Yeah.
Well, secret is you want young pigeons, right?
Young pigeons.
Yeah, squab. Yeah. My dad did some of those after I left home. They were special requests. My special request that mom would never do is boiled crawfish. All I requested a lot of times, it didn't work. In strawberry season, she would make shortcake. I'm not talking about these sponge cake things that you buy down at the store that are not fit to eat, but I'm talking about shortcake. shortcake, you know?
Made it this quick, buttermilk.
Yeah, she made hers out of flour and baking powder and other stuff. But it was good, right? You put the strawberries and the cream over the top of that. And blackberry season, which is coming up, blackberry cobbler. You know, Sharon, when she went to Branson, I took her to Branson so that she could have like a little vacation before her troubles. You know what she wanted? She wants some blackberry cobbler, okay? And peach season, peach cobbler, okay? And then the fall when the pecans would come on, pecan pie. Okay, I mean, my aunts would compete over who made the best pecan pie. And if you want to go to a competition that's fun to attend, a pecan pie making competition is wonderful. Okay, but it doesn't do much for your waistline, as you can see. Okay, so here are some things that were special that you did. Did your mom ever cook for other people? What are some examples? Did she ever cook for like a large group of people? What did she cook, Ben? Who did she cook for? What did she cook? Okay, but that's your family. I'm talking about not your family. Okay, did your mom ever cook for a large group of people that was not your family? Yes, what did she do?
She entertained a lot of church at her house, and she did the roast.
She'd make a roast and feed the whole church. Okay, any other examples? Yes, Carol.
Whenever he was sick, I made a year of and my mom always could cook for him.
Okay. Did your moms ever cook for like a really big group? Did she ever join the Red Cross and go off to Louisiana or Maine or someplace and cook? Yes, Casey?
My mom's
It's like a factory making cupcakes or cookies, yeah. Okay. Some of you did the same thing for cookies for other purposes, right? I mean, I think the church here has done that, haven't you? Didn't we make cookies a couple of times for the Red Cross, for blood drives? Yes?
We grow here too. We made lasagna and different things that we serve.
Okay. Did anybody's mom work in a restaurant or a cafe besides mine? Okay, what was that like?
Well, mine was a waitress, so she had to wait on all those people and give them specifically what they wanted and feed their orders.
To their orders. Okay, so people are ordering things and they're telling. What about your experiences? Your mom was doing cafe, restaurant.
Yeah. She worked on Deadwood Cooking Grounds out in Utah, and they did the testing on Agent Orange. So she ran the cafeteria and cooked for all the Army.
So there's all these Army guys going through, and they're all real hungry, right?
Yeah.
So, like, they're making stuff for them, and what kind of stuff did she make? Did she ever tell you stuff she made?
Well, she had to be there for all three meals, so it was, you know, 8 in the morning, sometimes pancakes, Bobby Joe's.
Pretty much an assembly line,
yeah.
I would imagine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dwayne, you said about your mom.
Yeah, I don't remember a lot of what she did, but I know she did some of the cooking and probably waiting. It was a small restaurant, Carlin Butcher and his wife, also a member of the church, but and she worked there. But,
Hey, sir?
I don't remember. They didn't have somebody in their home.
Okay.
But never for large groups, you know.
Just a small group in a cafe
but
taking orders.
With all of our events. That was just a common thing to do.
Okay.
Been born to the region that way.
Okay, Sarah, you have an example?
My mother worked at a restaurant in Parkersburg, and she made a different soup every day. People would stop her on the street and request their favorite soup each time. I wonder what kind of soup she was going to make. It was really homemade soup.
Mm-hmm.
And she was that or hot beef sandwich. That was the best thing you ever had in your life, hot beef sandwich.
Potato salad.
Yeah,
potato salad. Okay.
My grandma cooked for 9 boys and 1 girl every day.
Yeah. Well, it's still our family, though, okay? So, I'm looking for examples of not your family.
Well, my mom didn't work in a restaurant, but the church that I grew up in, the lady every year held a Christmas bazaar.
Mm-hmm.
And they would provide food and a bake sale type of thing. So they would cook hot dogs and chili and such.
Pretty ordinary fare for feeding a big group. Okay, yes?
Mom had a cake and cookie business for years. And we would do Christmas time 20 dozen nights. Is that about right?
Sure.
Making Jamie Ness and Frost and Mama cooking. But probably her best is almost every time she goes to the doctor, she takes a cake or cookies or... She was up to have her cell phone worked on, and they know if mom comes in, she's going to bring cookies up there. So
maybe your mom could come over to my house.
Yeah.
Okay. So is Jamie your like quality control? He would sample and make sure they're okay?
Oh, yeah.
So, okay.
I did remember one.
Yes.
My dad had the only threshing machine in the township, and we'd have a threshing crew in the fall, and mom would cook for them.
So this is like guys that have been working real hard. And
all the farmers that, you know, they would thresh our oats, and then we'd go there and thresh their oats. And whoever the mother was, whoever the wife was in the family at that time, whichever farm they were, they would do the cooking. Mm-hmm. And I remember some huge tables with big, hungry men.
Big, hungry men. These are guys trying to take in 8,000 or 9,000 calories a day to keep up with what they're doing. Okay, so... No, I mean, honest. I mean, if you're burning 8,000 calories a day, you need to eat 8,000 calories a day. You need four meals and, yeah, okay. And it's like volumes. I mean, it's like, it almost becomes like an assembly line, doesn't it?
Yeah.
My mom had a cafe when she was young. She worked in a cafe in Memphis, and then she came, and I think in Arburg was the name of the town. She had a little cafe, and then when she was like, when she was like 4 years old or so, she went to work for the school, and she was one of the school cooks. And she made food, I mean, like, you want to talk about having it down to a science assembly line. I mean, it was like making food, and she'd make like chocolate cake, and I love chocolate. You know, when you want to put nuts and chocolate together and like in different versions, I really like that. And she'd make these chocolate brownie things with walnuts in it. Sound good? And even if it was kind of assembly line, you know, we all kind of look forward to it. So, and like they would make pizza, and this was ladies that had never seen a pizza, so they got the ingredients and they just kind of figured out what to do with it, and it didn't look anything like a pizza, but it sure tasted good, so we all loved it. Well, I guess, how is my mom making brownies for hundreds and hundreds of kids down at the school different from my mom? And just think about this in your example of what you gave. How's that different from her making that rabbit every Easter? How's that different? She's making hundreds of brownies for hundreds of kids to eat, and they're going to pass them out, and here's yours, please move down, the next person is going to get one, whatever, versus making that birthday cake that's got 13 candles on it because I'm 13 years old, or the rabbit cake. How is that different?
Dwayne? She has, there were many, probably several people that she never knew. She may have known a name, but she did not. They weren't like her children. There were
people she was helping because they needed to eat.
There you go. Right? That's right.
Yeah, they weren't her children. It was different. Yeah.
She didn't know all those kids, but she loved you.
Yeah. Or?
Your kid, she was doing it for you. An individual.
Yeah.
For a whole bunch of people, but she was doing it for you.
She was doing it for me, and she was doing it because I asked. Now, if somebody does something because you ask, and they're doing it for you personally, because you're their child, you're somebody special to them, it's different. You know, to tell you the truth, I like the chocolate brownies with the chocolate stuff and the walnuts in it better than I like the rabbit cake. It tasted better. But it was different getting passed out one of those at school versus getting a birthday cake, right? It's just different because it's because you ask, because it's personal. It's because it's personal relationship between the two of you. Anybody see where I'm going with this? That's the way it is with us and God. You know, there's a couple of people have asked the question, well, what about when there's two families that show up at the hospital and their loved one is there and sick and they're concerned about it, and one family's over there praying, please God, help us with our loved one who is sick. And there's another family over there that's, you know, laughing and joking, and you know, you can make up stories about whatever they did, but the last thing on their mind is to think, we need to ask God for help today. It's the last thing on their mind, and they don't. You know, when Sharon went into surgery, she was saying, well, I hope the elders come soon because I think they're going to take me early, and I sure would appreciate if they would pray over me first. And they came, and you know what? The hospital staff, when they heard that, you know what they did? They said, wait a minute, let's slow down here. Let's wait for this because this is important to this person. Okay? What's different? What's different is our relationship with God personally, us recognizing, like Casey said last week, there's something special about us recognizing inside of ourselves that we need more than just the healing power of our own body or whatever it is that we think we got, that we need God to help us to get through what we're about to have to get through. That it's important we acknowledge that. It's important that we ask. And there's a relationship. Do you think it was special to my mom that I asked her to make that birthday cake with the 13 candles? Mom, would you do something special for me? Don't you think that that made her heart rise? Of my child asked me for something that really only I can do. It was special to her. And when she made it, it was special to me. On the example down at the hospital, it's possible that the family that didn't make any supplication to God at all got to take their family member home with them alive and kicking. And it's possible that the family that prayed for God's help had their family member pass away. Now, and there's people that say, oh, how could God benefit this group of people and then not give the same benefit to people who are His children? Well, how does that happen? God doesn't always say yes. Remember when we were talking about fathers? Do fathers always give you what you want? The fathers have the tendency to give you what they think you need. And sometimes that's different. Did your mother always give you everything that you wanted? No, but?
No way.
No way. Sometimes you wanted things that weren't good for you, right? You know, the kid in my class, that his parents did more to give him everything that he wanted than any other kid in the class, last time I knew, was in jail. No, he was in jail. Okay? I mean, and he belongs there. Okay? Colleen, let me go to you and then Dave. I see you.
Sometimes we got things we didn't want. We get her just thinking.
Oh. Well, but remember, go back that sometimes your parents give you things what you need instead of what you want. And were there times that you kind of needed that spanking? Yeah, might have been. Now, here's a fellow that's an expert on needing a spanking. So you need to elaborate on this for us, okay?
I was going to go a different direction.
All right. You can tell us about the other later. Or your dad can tell us. Or your mom. I can see your mom's thinking up there.
All they have to do is give me the look. And I don't know where it came to that point where I understood that all I needed was the look to behave. I mean, they didn't have to go to very often to the next stage. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like, oh, I know what you mean, yeah. I've gotten the look, yeah, recently.
I was such a good kid that that's all it took.
So you might need to go down front afterwards. But where were you going to go, really?
That this praying part is deeper than the answer to the prayer. It's about us trusting in God and having a faith in God, no matter. he prayed for his son to live. And what he went through before that, his prayer wasn't answered, but he wanted it. But he had faith in God and went to God with that. And when the outcome, when the child died, he still had faith in God. But it didn't change that. And I think that's what God wants from us. It's not the outcome of the prayer, it's the fact that we go to him in faith.
It's about a relationship.
Yeah.
It's about God doing what's best. David's other sons, what were their lives like? That little boy died when he was just a baby. And I think most of us believe he went home to be with God. What was his other sons' lives like? Was there a blessing? They were killing each other. They were challenging him. They were being killed for their sin. David was even reprimanded and punished because he should have punished his sons and he didn't. Sometimes when the family goes home with their loved one, it's because God knows that they need another chance because they haven't taken it to become a Christian. That he's doing what he does for them out of need. And sometimes when the family goes home with their loved one having passed away, that although it doesn't seem like that to the family at the moment, for the person that's in God's bosom now, it actually is a blessing. And it's a little hard to take on the day when it happens, but I'm sure many of you have seen someone whose family was praying for the benefit of that person, that the best thing that could have happened to the person was for God to bring them home. I see some heads nodding here. Okay. Yes.
It can also be a blessing for one of the people who lost them.
And so explain. A blessing for the person who lost their loved one.
Because there's times that something can come out of that that could be of great benefit for the person that they can't see at the time, but can happen in the future. That may not have happened if that person wasn't around.
Yeah. Maybe that person was doing for them and they needed to learn to do for themselves. For example. I mean, that's the most obvious one. Dave?
I had a minister friend at one time made the comment that he much preferred to do funerals than he did weddings. And the reason for that is when he was performing weddings, all eyes were not on him, but on the bride and groom. When there's a funeral, all eyes are on the minister. He got their attention.
I'm going to think about that for a minute. There was a minister that told a story one time about going to see this family that had lost a loved one, and he got in there, all he could do was break down and cry, and he felt so ashamed of himself that he just left and he didn't go back. He went back later and he was going to apologize to them, and they all were so excited to see him. Because he thought he was supposed to say something really wise, and what the family remembered was is that he cried with them. It was the right thing. Rose?
Developing this faith in God.
Spirit wasn't sent to help us do our will. The Spirit was sent to help us do God's will, right? Jesus didn't come to show us how to get our way. Jesus came to illustrate what it meant to live God's way. Dan?
I was kind of came up a little bit on Sinai.
Hold on to that for a second. Okay? I got a whole section for that. Okay? Hold on to that thought.
Do you have time for it?
I think so. So the point here is to know that when we ask God for something and when God does something for us, do you know what the root meaning of the word miracle is? It's a Latin word, and it means literally something wonderful. You know, after we talked about miracles a couple weeks ago, I went down to the Dairy Queen with the kids, and it was the Miracle Network was inside, and went out to eat the ice cream, and there we were sitting under the sign that said Miracle Car Wash. Okay, so actually, and that it means something wonderful, right? It means something wonderful. In the Bible, the word that's translated miracle, it's one of those weird deals that in both the Old Testament and the New Testament, there are four words, two Hebrew words, two Greek words that are translated miracle. And in most places, those words aren't translated miracle. One of them means power in both Greek and in Hebrew, and the other means a sign. And the one that's used a few times is a sign. The one that's used a lot of times is power. Okay. In Greek, it's dunamis, which is like dynamite, like power. Okay, it means something wonderful by the power of God. Do you think that when you pray that God does things that are something wonderful by His power for you? May not always be what it wants, what you want. It's almost always not what you're doing that proves that you're some kind of special messenger from God. But it's God's power working in your life to do something because you ask Him. Just like that birthday cake. Works the same way. It's because of a personal relationship between you and God. So the question, and I want to make sure that okay, I think I've timed this, I can do it, okay? A week and a half ago, I introduced you to an idea called ordinary miracles. And that's, you got to take those two words together, because this doesn't mean apostolic authority kind of miracles. This is talking about God doing something by His power because of your relationship and His power and your need for Him. Everybody benefits from those things. All of His children do. And last week, Dave introduced you to something called greater gifts, because the Corinthian church, they had all of these miraculous gifts that showed that they were speaking for God. And were they having trouble with them? Jealousy trouble? Fighting over which one? And Dave even suggested that maybe some people were going to church and faking some of the gifts. And especially, which one? Tongues, okay? Because it's pretty easy to fake that one. It's like babble, right? It just sounds like babble. And then he talked about greater gifts. And what were the greater gifts?
Faith, hope, and love.
And he told us those are greater. And those are greater for a couple reasons. One of them is they're greater because they don't end. They're greater because everybody can have them. They're greater because they're actually more important than the gifts that these people are fighting over. They really are. They're spiritual things. Okay. And then Wednesday, Dan introduced you to the idea of the fruit of the Spirit. And by the way, fruit, I looked it up, fruit technically is a ripened ovary. It's like a plant, a ripened ovary. That a plant has a female part, and the female part has to be pollinated or fertilized, and then it grows into whatever it grows into. That might just be a seed, or it might be whatever, but that's what a fruit is, okay? As opposed to a vegetable, which is whatever part of the plant you can eat, which may not be that. Which kind of goes back to our sweet corn conversation, right? Okay, here he is. But his point was, maybe you can't tell what kind of a thing it is by its leaves or its bark covering, the stem covering, but how can you always always tell what kind of a plant it is?
Fruit.
By its fruit. So if you hold up this thing, looks a lot like an apple, you know that that came from an apple. If not an apple tree, at least an apple branch, right? For sure, it comes from an apple. If you hold up an orange, it came from an orange tree. Okay? And you look in Galatians chapter 5 where the fruits of the Spirit are explicitly stated, and it says explicitly the fruits of the Spirit are. Right? And you have listed all these fruits. But I'm not going to repeat them. Okay? And somebody asked this question that Dan was bringing up. And Dan, what was the question that they asked?
Well, how the fruit of the Spirit in people's lives that are not Christian.
Okay, and you brought up grafting, right? And you know, anybody know about grafting? Could you take an apple branch off of an apple tree and graft it into a thorn tree?
I think so.
I think so too. You could. In fact, there's people take apple trees and they'll take like six different varieties of apples and they'll graft them all on the tree so you get different, you know, you get yellow, red, whatever. You can do that. There's something really special about that though. If you walked up to a thorn tree that it had some apple branches grafted into it, oh wait, I'm going to the wrong place first. First of all, there's a reason why you see people exhibiting fruits of the Spirit who are not Christians. There's two big ways this happens. The first way is, whose image are we created in? God's. If you go back and read Romans, and especially you want to read Romans chapter 1 and chapter 2. Somebody turn over to Romans chapter 2. Let's read a couple verses there. Romans chapter 2 verses 14 through 16. Sam, you got that one? Would you read it for us?
But the Gentiles who do not have the law do instinctively the things of the law. These, not having the law, are a law unto themselves, in that they show the works of the law written in their hearts, their conscience bearing witness, their thoughts alternately excusing or defending them on the day when, according to my gospel, God will judge the secrets of men through Christ Jesus.
Okay, and if you go back to Romans chapter 1, it's talking about people know instinctively better not to do some of the things that they do. So it's instinctive for people to do good things because we're made in God's image and our nature is to do good things. It's our nature. And there are people that do good things. Now, if they're not Christians yet and they're out there doing good things and they're doing things from good motivation, good heart, what's missing? Oh, they didn't know where I was going. What's missing? What hasn't happened to them yet? They haven't been pricked in. Who's supposed to go do that? We are. What's happened is here's somebody that God has painted with a big brush. This is one of my people that you're supposed to be reaching out to. They haven't become a Christian yet because they haven't understood about becoming a Christian yet. They're instinctively doing the right thing. They're good people. They're people destined to be Christians, and what they're waiting for is for us to go to them and bring them the message. We need to bring the gospel to them. That's one example. But the other example is the one that's kind of evil. Any of you guys ever go fishing? Ward, you like to go fishing. So you go out fishing, you roll out in your boat, or you do your motor thing, whatever, and you take your bobber, you take your hook, you throw it out in the thing, and the fish bites on the hook, right? Is that the way that works?
Bait on the hook.
What?
Bait.
Bait on the hook.
Something he likes.
You put something on the hook that he likes?
You're kind of disguised.
Well, you just take the worms out there and you know they like worms, so you just drop the worms in the... No? You put bait on the hook. What's the hook for?
The hook is to catch you.
Well, so you can bring the fish in the boat and tell him how pretty he is and let it go again, right? The hook's in there for your purposes, right? Okay. The bait is on there for what? To deceive the fish. To offer him something that he needs and wants, even though your intention is not for his best interest. So what happens with this person that has grafted an apple branch into their thorn tree? What kind of a tree is it still?
It's
a thorn tree. It's like that. It's like the fish hook. That the fish hook is there for the intent of the person, and the bait, which is good, is there to lure the victim in. So when you see something that's malicious, that's, yeah, they're doing something good. So did any of you ever read a book called The Prince that was written by Machiavelli hundreds of years ago?
No.
Have you ever heard of Machiavelli? Oh, okay, here's somebody. Machiavelli, what did he tell the ruling aristocracy that he wrote that book to about doing good deeds? Do you remember? He talked about doing good deeds, didn't he? What did he say you were supposed to do? Yeah, so you could get what you wanted in the end, pick something that the people would think was good, and be seen doing it, and be recognized as doing it. Did he actually tell the people to become a good person and do every good thing that they could do? No, he was saying, pick something good that you can do and use it for bait. So that the people say, oh yeah, that prince, he's great. He did, you know, he formed a soup line when we were short on food or whatever, and he's just the greatest guy. And never mind that, you know, he took my children off and made them fight in his war and they didn't come back, or took my property or whatever else it was, and we'll blame that on somebody else, is that he talked about using bait. If you look at a thorn tree, there's a way to tell that the thorn tree is really a thorn tree. And what's the hint? So here's an apple branch. There's an apple down from it.
Natural fruit.
The natural fruit.
It's not an apple. It's thornberries.
Thornberries. Okay, and by the way, there are some thorn trees that actually do produce fruit, and the birds depend on the thorns to keep the predators away, and maybe thorns are not that good an example. But in this example, it is that if somebody is really intent on doing evil, it's a fairly common thing for them to go back and do something good, just as public relations. How can you tell that their real intent is not good?
Sometimes you can't
right away, but if you stop back and study it, how can you tell that their intentions are not good? End result? Okay, so the fruit is still there. You can. Who did it benefit? Did it forward a selfish will, or did it benefit the will of God? No matter what you do, that thorn tree is still going to be mostly thorns. And if people notice the thorns, what do these organizations, religious organizations, people, whatever, they get busy grafting more apple branches in. So hopefully you notice the apple branches and not the thorns. And the more they get noticed for being a thorn tree, the harder they're working putting those apple branches in, aren't they? Look at the good we do. Can you think of some examples? And I want to be really careful not to name any, but all of you know examples of some organization or some leader that did something good and made a big deal out of it, and then see, look, it's a big deal. And then we discovered that maybe they weren't such a righteous person, that they weren't so full of the fruits of the Spirit, because what happened? They did something that was sensual, greedy, immoral, just downright evil. So when you go back to this book in Galatians and you look at the fruit of the Spirit, what happened before the fruit of the Spirit? Dan, you taught this. Would you turn back to Galatians chapter 5? Back up, I think it's 19 through 21. Before he listed the fruits of the Spirit, what did Paul list?
Now the flesh are evident, which are immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, envy, strife, jealousy, outbursts of anger, disputes, dissension, fighting, eating, drunkenness, carousing, and counts like these, of which I forewarn you, just as I have forewarned you, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom.
Ooh. Those are signs that maybe it's a thorn tree, aren't they? So if you go to a place, so let's say it's a church, for example, and they're feeding the poor, but they've got dissensions and disputes and arguments about who's the leader, or they're trying to force just one view opinions on people about stuff. This is like choosing up sides and going at it. What's that a clue of? When you look around and you see the deeds of the flesh, and they're the ones that are really evident, and there's lots of them, and maybe you'll see a fruit of the Spirit, and it's possible for somebody like that to do it, and they're using it for bait. They're dangling the worm on the hook, and their intention is to catch people. Here's the thing that I got 2 minutes, so let me get to the punchline. Okay, there are some religious schools that teach that the Spirit is not in Christians in any way that empowers them to do the will of God by the power of God. That there is no power in the Spirit in our lives. If you went to see the movie The Golden Compass, that's what it's talking about, is moving people away from spirit, their spirit, disconnecting them. There are some religious schools that teach that the Spirit must be in one of the same ways as the Spirit was in the church in Jerusalem and Corinth in the first century. They teach their adherents how to fake things like speaking in tongues. You guys talked about that last week, right? They say, okay, you have to be able to do these things. You have to be able to pick up live snakes. You have to be able to speak in tongues. Or you have to do something else. And they teach people how to do that, and which that's pretty fake, ain't it? It sure is. There are some religious schools that teach that the Spirit is in us, but it's not in any way that we can really discern except by a logical argument, one that they actually offer. This is the one I think churches of Christ most often fall prey to. The argument is that the Scripture says that Jesus was baptized by the water and the Spirit, and therefore if you've been baptized in the water, you have the Spirit, you just can't tell it. That there's no power. That there's nothing about the Spirit that's going to make you able to do something you yourself cannot do.
Where does it say that?
It doesn't.
You know what I mean?
I know. So, what I believe the Bible teaches is that to be a Christian, you have to be born of the water and the Spirit. Go look it up. It's in John 3:5. Jesus said it. It's a red word in your Bible. Okay? It's one of those red lines. Water and Spirit. The Spirit has always been given as a sign and as power. Always as evidence. The Spirit's there for evidence. The Spirit doesn't live in a Christian without producing evidence. The evidence is what? You know that from the fruit you can tell what kind of tree it is. How do you have evidence that the Spirit is in your life? You guys know this. Nope. How do you have proof that the Spirit is in your life? By the fruits of the Spirit. The apple tree can prove that it's an apple tree because it makes apples. And you can prove that to yourself. You can know that you've got the Spirit in you, because if you've got the Spirit in you, you're going to produce fruit. Unless you're like that fig tree that didn't produce any fruit that Jesus cursed and it was withered. The Spirit-filled Christian produces the fruit of the Spirit. So on Wednesday, we're going to pick this up. Okay? And let me give you three, if you write notes down and get your pencil out. So let me give you, I think, three passages that we're going to look at especially. We're going to look at Romans chapter 12, verses 3 through 21. We're going to look at 2 Peter 1, verses 5 through 8. We're going to look at Colossians chapter 3, verses 12 through 17. And we're going to look at James chapter 3, verses 13 through 18. So Romans chapter 12, 2 Peter chapter 1, Colossians chapter 3, James chapter 3. Look at those and see how many fruits of the Spirit you can pick out. Because if those are the fruits that are supposed to be in us, and the one in Peter says, if these are the things that are increasing in you, then that's good. Okay? I mean, I'll tell you ahead of time what one of them is going to say. So we're going to look at what are the remaining fruits of the Spirit on Wednesday night. So look up, and if you find some others that are in other places, look them up, write them down. We're going to stop and just share them. Okay? So all of you are going to tell me what they are on Wednesday night. Thanks for your kind attendance again this morning. Sorry for being a minute late. Bye-bye.